Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this very special presentation from our sister center in France, Nalanda Monastery. I want to welcome Venerable Lobsang Tender, who is a past director and SPC at Nalanda Monastery, and he's come to share with us about not only about the life at Nalanda, but about another aspect of what he does in service to FPMT, which is the he works with a group that offers support to FPMT Sangha members. So let's give a warm welcome to Venerable Tender.
I would like to start with just 1 minute in silence. In our tradition, we try to make our life beneficial and spiritual. So we set our motivation that we want to use this hour or 2 hours when we are here, 1.5 hour, as beneficial as possible. So we set our motivation that we want to use this life to get the most big result in terms of that we want to create merit for to become Buddha ourselves, or otherwise at least to get liberated. That means that we overcome all our disturbing emotions and obscurations for in a way that we know never become angry again and jealous and so on. So no causes anymore for lower rebirth. And otherwise, it's good to have a motivation to do good in this life, so that we have also good next lives. Because all our actions have results. All our actions by mind, by speech, with our body, all the activities we do, they have consequences. So we have 1 minute silence, so to reflect on our motivation to come to this place this night. We can do a very quickly body scan, like do we feel relaxed? This is in order to forget the past and also forget the future, just to be in the moment. So we can check our legs. The feet first, then the under legs, then the upper legs. We can check our belly. We don't have to change anything. Just follow what is there, what comes up. We check our shoulders, are they relaxed? Our upper arms, our hands. And our face, our cheeks, forehead. So if we set very big goals to reach, to use our Buddha potential, if we want to become Buddha, this all-knowing being, we include all the good qualities of the smaller and the middle scope as well. Then if we have our motivation one step lower, we want to get an end to all our suffering. And for this, we are here. We do our activities. This includes also a good rebirth and even more happiness in this life. So when we face a lot of suffering and we find life very difficult, But we have the outlook of also next rebirth. We don't want to do bad things and only do in general good things. Our actions have this result. So, thank you very much. So, first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me here. And Donna, I had a lot of contact with, and I'm very well, nice welcomed here by David and Elise. So, thank you so very much for welcoming. Yes, because so as you can see, I'm a monk. I'm actually from Netherlands, so I want to apologize already for my accent tonight. actually already in 95, I decided to become monk, and I followed the Buddhist course in a center like this, also connected with Lama Zopa Rinpoche, also affiliated with the FBMT. And there was a Geshe, like you have here, Geshe's, and there was a Tibetan master who studied very long time in Sira. And I followed the course for 2 weeks, and then I had already the imprint I want to become monk, and then I still waited 6-7 years actually. And I asked the Geshe, is it good to become monk? And he said, yeah, it's very good for your life. And so I prepared further, and at the end I made a step to become monk in 2002, so it's now 17 years ago. And I asked at the same time to the Geshe, like, what shall I do? And he said, yeah, best to live with other monks, you know, it's best to live with other ordained, and you have to, it's easier to live, and it's also better for the Dharma. It's good to form a group. So in a community. So he said, if there's place in France, in Alanda, then that would be best. So at one point in January 2002, I ordained, and in March I arrived. 6 weeks later, I arrived in the monastery. So that's a little bit my background. So I lived there now 17 years. I've been in the meantime 7.5 years director, and so from 2005 to 2013. And since then, and before and after, I've been also a spiritual program coordinator. So I've been always heavily involved in setting up this community. And I brought two short videos. Both are about 5 minutes. And shows very well, like, the monastery where we are from. Another thing I would like to tell from the outset is that you will see in the very first video. So there's an opportunity to buy our property next door, and so when we ask Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and in such cases the center or the monastery always ask Lama Zopa Rinpoche for advice, you know, because he is the ultimate authority, so he checks, and he said it comes out as best for the future. So this next door property is a little bit more than $1 million, that's 1.3 and a half, something like that. So we asked Lama Zopa Rinpoche, what shall we do? Shall we go to the rich Chinese? They are very famous for their generosity. Shall we go to Singapore, Hong Kong? In the West, it's very difficult, at least with our current students and monks and nuns and the people we have contact with, we don't get that together. And I said, no, you go to United States. He told us, go to the United States. So that's why I'm here. So, of course, we ask permission in the FPMT if we can contact the centers, because many centers have their own worries, you know, so there's a kind of policy to protect centers that that they get requests for all kinds of charities, including our monastery, you know. But for this time, we got permission. So thanks to your kindness, I'm able to come. Yeah, so I'm already since the 10th of October on tour here in the United States. Because there's quite some FMT centers in the Bay Area, that was the most easy to go in the beginning. So the planning, we don't know the centers, and the centers don't know who are we. And so it was in the beginning a little bit difficult, like what to expect from each other, and you know, so scheduling and many times with a decision like to teach, there's more people involved, so it takes all time. So I've been in the meantime to California, and then we stayed about 6 weeks, I think, because there's also 5 FMT centers, and also we had a friend where we could stay the whole time, and then stay 5 days, and then we went out for 5 days, came back for 5 days, we go again for 5 days. So that was very easy to organize, and so we went in the meantime also to Portland, to Yangtze Rinpoche's Maitripa College. It's a kind of university also connected with FMT, and then we went to Denver and New Mexico, so Colorado, New Mexico, and we were in a church in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and then also we went to Florida, to the FMT Center in Florida. Then I went to the FMT Center in Boston, and then until yesterday morning I was in Vermont, the most northern state, like there's Milarepa Center, also connected with Lama Zopa Rinpoche's mandala, and then and now I'm here, and then I continue still to Washington, and then I go back to Amsterdam. So there's a little bit of the context why I'm here, and and also gives a little bit of context to the videos. Yeah, maybe we can start now the video with the Nalanda Monastery, the fast vision. It's only 5 minutes. But. So, yeah, that's a little bit about our monastery. So, anyway. Yeah, it gives a little bit an impression where we are talking about when we talk about Nalanda. So there's a lot of aspects to the monastery. So actually, I promise not to do too much fundraising. But anyway, you see, this is made also a bit for fundraising. But anyway, I hope that you first give a lot to the Dharma Center here, that you make 100% sure this functions very well. And if you have something extra, then maybe you know something now where to spend it. Yeah, so, as you can see, Nalanda exists since 81. It's a very long time. And we are part of a triangle, a Dharma Center, which is called Institut Vajrayogini. It's a quite big Dharma Center. It started in 79, just after that the first Dharma Centers started in the West, in the 70s, end of the 70s. Because in the 60s, the Westerners discovered the Tibetans in India, you know, and the Tibetans were refugees in the camps there, and some people read some Buddhist books and then looked for teachers, and then they met the hippies, they met our drugs, or they met the teachers, you know, so they want some alternatives, so that was a different but still in the 60s and early 70s all the students had to go over to India to these masters. They were not really Dharma centers, and some who were a little bit more rich, they thought already like, oh, maybe if we have places here, then more people can benefit from these excellent teachings, you know, who really make a change in your heart. You make really a change in our lives. So we hope that more people benefit from these big teachers. So they start Dharma centers like Institut Vajrayogini in 79. Very quickly, I think in the first year they had already insurance, and then they were on a roof construction, and then the tower got in fire. It was a chateau, and classic chateau, a tower. And with this insurance money, so they called Lama Yeshe, who was still alive in 1980, the teacher of Lama Zopa Rinpoche. He was the founder of the FMT. So, Lama Yeshe said, fantastic, fantastic, auspicious, auspicious. So they were a bit shocked, and then, but very quickly came the message, don't use the money for repair, buy a new property, because there were already monks and nuns wandering around in India, and they were enthusiastic about Dharma, and they did not have really a place. They became monks and nuns, so some still were quite poor, and they had all kind of visa problems. At that time, India was even more poor than nowadays, and was hygiene problems. Many people I knew from that who were already practitioners in those days, and developed hepatitis. Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopram, they saw that some people were so enthusiastic about Dharma that they want to become monk and nun, and there was no place actually for them, so they did not fit in the classic institutions from the Tibetans, you know. So I think at one point he asked that whole group of monks and nuns, which monks want to commit to make this place a monastery, and I think a few monks raised their hands, and then he asked the nuns, which nuns want to be responsible for this place, and then there was no hands. This is the story why it became a monastery and not a nunnery. But Institute Vajogini had some place free, and some nuns started a nunnery in one of the buildings there. And many of those nuns at those days, around 79, 80, 81, 82, are now really leading nuns in this world, like Thupten Children, who has a nunnery in Washington State, and Kathleen McDonald or Sangye Kadro, who wrote all these meditation books and some other books, and also quite some nuns from those days, they had later high positions in the FPMT, or they started here and there study groups or centers. So this nunnery was called Dodje Pamo. It collapsed after 3, 4, 5 years, because also Rinpoche asked those nuns, Thupten Children, to teach in Singapore in FPMT Center and Sangye Kadro, and also some nuns they want to travel for. So at one point they did not return, but they had for many years they had teachings in Nalanda. And in the beginning Nalanda was really booming, and it was really a big need for that, but slowly, I think one very big lama, he left. He was teacher at Nalanda for 10 years, Geshe Tekshok. And when he left, also almost all the monks left, or disrobed, or one died, and so there was it really collapsed. So in the 90s, I think Nalanda had sometimes six monks, and sometimes three, and sometimes nine. So by 2002, when I came, there was just a new Geshe appointed since 2000. And so he was just the second year, third year when I came. And so there were at that time, again, I was number 12. There was only one building. It was quite dusty, actually. I had to get really used to such a dusty place. But there was a potential. There was one monk working very hard. He gave his whole life during 10 years to make a new building, and then that building was quite big with a lot of potential for office and big gompa and 16 bedrooms and kitchen and so forth. So there was the potential, but just when I came, I think at the end of the year, also our Geshe, he was appointed somewhere else. So it was at the end of the year, I think that we were with three or four, and I really asked one very high lama. I said, what's this with Nalanda? He said, small places become big. He said, small places become big. So I had always hope. And also, of course, it was called Nalanda, this place where I went to. So it has this connection with this old monastery in India, the old Nalanda. So in the old Nalanda, you know the old Nalanda, nowadays it's ruins, it's close to Bodh Gaya, the north of India, where the Buddha reached enlightenment. So it was a monastery from the 5th century to the 13th century around. And at its heydays, it was about, I count it in kilometers, I don't know exactly in miles, but it was about 7 kilometers long and 2-3 kilometers broad. So it was really a huge complex. In those days, it was a very big university. It had enormous libraries, and they say that it had even 2,000 teachers. Not only there was Dharma, it was a really monastery, so it was a lot of people were monks, and the Dharma was one of the main subjects, but there was also astronomy, astrology, poesy, there was so there was some other subject as well, but people could study Hindu philosophy, and so it was quite a very big place at that time, you know. And when I came into Nalanda and I saw from the window, there's fields on the right side and there's some fields on the left side. I thought like, yeah, yeah. In the future, when I listened to the teachings, teachers, then also the teacher who left at that moment, he said, yeah, Lama Zopra Mishe appoints me now in Barcelona, which was a 4 hours drive, a 5 hours drive, because we are in the south of France. So actually we are closer to Barcelona than to Paris. Paris is about 7 hours drive in the middle of France, so a little bit more to the north actually. So so at the end of the year I became SVC, my first year, 2002. So I asked my teacher like, oh yeah, you go now to Barcelona, but were you happy here, or what do you think about Nalanda? And then he said, I see the potential of the place. And at this moment, not many monks came to the teachings. You know, we were with 10 monks, but one thought that he knew everything, so he never came to the teachings. One was always working on the construction side. One was always working in the workshop. One was came only in the summer because he was too sick for the winter. And then so we had 6 monks, and then one of us always had to cook. So at the teachings there were often only 4 or 5 monks, you know, so it was not so flourishing. So that was one of the causes, I think, that Lama Zopa Rinpoche thought it's been more beneficial if Geshe Jampo, with all his knowledge, benefits the people in Barcelona. So, but he said, I see the potential of the place, and you know, but I want to continue helping Nalanda, and okay, I come every month at the end of the month, 8 days, and then I teach every day 2 times, and then totally you still get the same number of teaching. So for about 5 years we functioned like that. So we got sometimes big teachers 1 to 2 times a year, but Geshe Jampa came at the end of the month, and then we had 8 days teachings and 4 hours a day. So it was still quite very nice. And after, so in 2005, I became director. One of the first things I did was asking Jean-François, who was making this building, when do you think it's ready? Because we want to have a good study program, you know, like when it's ready, we have 16 more rooms, so we have more. We can also get lay students, you know. We can see, like, there's not so many places on this planet where you have full-time studies. So he said, oh, I think I still need 2 years, 2006, 2007, so... Then we had a really meeting with the monks and said like, okay, can we stay here? Can we work a little bit more and do a little bit more meditations and pujas and wait with study program? So I think many of these monks agreed, you know, that we have some patience before we really get a study program going on. Yeah, we had the discussions with everyone within the FPMT, with the master, so what is the... How many years will we do a basic program? We will start with a basic program. So we did 5 years, we decided. So one point, so when the building was ready in 2008, we could start a 5 years basic program. And then we doubled immediately with people. For 2 years, we could make a little bit publicity. We got many volunteers coming. Then they stayed for 1 month, 2 months, and then we sent them home to earn more money that they could do the program as well if they were interested. So, So in the meantime, I think we do already the third round of 5 years, 2008 to 12, and then 13 to 17, and now in 18, last year, we started the second year, so we've now almost done 2 years of the 5 years basic program. And the many students of about 15, I think, of the first basic program from 2008 to 12, they continued in 2013 with the master program. So we, since then, we have a 7 years master's program. And that will be finished next year. So at this moment, we run 2 programs. The master program is doing more in the morning, and the basic program uses the big temple most in the afternoon. Yeah, so that's a little bit of this moment. Our monastery, with we have 2 teachers, Western Tibetan teachers. Geshe Jampa, you still saw them. For both programs, we have a teacher assistant. One is a student, an Israeli lady, and one is American English guy. He did a master program in Italy and now is assistant for the master program in Nalanda. And then we have Yeah, Europe has many languages, as you know. So in Orlando, we speak always English as in daily life with all the messages on the board. But the teachings are also translated into French. So we have also three, the master program is only in English and Spanish, actually, because one monk translates for another monk who does not speak well English. So actually, the master program is in two languages. And also the basic program is really also in French and English. Translated, so we have a big staff, and then we have two program coordinators for both to communicate everything for everyone, and take care for the students as well. There's a lot of care for the all the students, and then we have a program online, so there's also one or two people working for that. So actually, we have a staff of about 10 people in Orlando to run just these programs, you know. And so in Orlando we have now about 30 monks, and we have about, 10, 12 lay students who rent a room and do the studies with us. And then I think come about also 12, 15 people from outside. This is most nuns, women, and married people, but also sometimes guys who prefer to have more free life outside the monastery, but they still do come Monday to Friday to the program. And then we have about 12 volunteers. So we also accept volunteers for a minimum 1 month, and then so they help in the workshop and in especially also in the kitchen. Yeah. Also, of course, all the people in Orlando also have to do karma yoga. So everyone has to work 7 to 10 hours. But still, in order to have a very nice garden and be of inspiration to the environment and the region and for the visitors and for each other, there's a lot of work. So, yeah, so that's a bit how Nalanda is run. So, and as I said, we are part of a triangle. So the Institute Vajrayogini is much more for the locals, actually. So they do the weekend courses. So all the people who are new into Buddhism, they go to the Institute, what we call the Institute Vajrayogini. And, they speak there all French, and they do have more outreach programs as well. And of course they know us very well, so they know exactly who to ask for, which meetings with interreligious and school classes and so on. So then they have all around little study groups who meet once a week in other cities, you know, like so they have I think about 8 other places where there are monthly or weekly teachings. And there we participate as teacher as well. So we cooperate a lot with Institute Vajrayogini when it comes to also big teachers coming along, Langma Zopa Rinpoche, Ganda Tripa. That will be the next video. Ganda Tripa, he came in September, but we do together, you know. So he teaches there a little bit in Nalanda, and it's also for us financially because you have to pay the ticket and the transport and. So that's for the monastery also easier to organize. So maybe we can do the second video we talk about. Ganda Tripa is the highest lama in the Gelugpa tradition. Of course, it's His Holiness, but in meetings, it's always Ganda Tripa who represents the Gelugpa tradition in meetings to the outside. Like, but for the Kagyu and the Sakya, the Kagyu is always a Kagyu has always what's the highest of the Kagyu? Karmapa. Sakya Trinchen is always represents it the highest in the Sakya tradition. There's 4 traditions in Tibet, and then the Nyingma is the kind of also relating system, and the Gelugpas as well. So there's a it can be every time another master who represents the tradition. And Ganda Tripa, he is very well known, but actually he's kind of like a walking library. If you talk about studies and someone memorizing all these texts, it seems Ganda Tripa is almost unbeatable. He knows so many texts just by heart, can quote from it, and can, in debates, it's so obvious that he knows immediately what went wrong in reasoning and so on. Yeah, so it's a... He's now 84. He went in the past a lot to Deer Park in Madison, because I think his teacher was Geshe Sopa there from who was teacher there. Okay, thank you.
Should this start at the very beginning or at the 15th?
I don't know, actually. Yeah, good. Yeah. So, as Rinpoche says, it's every year in the Gelugpa tradition, in general, we emphasize in the beginning studies. But of course, the whole thing about why we follow the Buddhist path is to change our hearts slowly, you know, to become more compassionate and therefore we have to, yeah, study, and especially the wisdom side. They say enlightenment has to, if you go there, the path is two wings of two enlightenment. One is the wisdom side and one is the method side, like the karma and the six perfections, like generosity, love, compassion, understanding, and so on. That's what the other wing, but especially for the wisdom realizing emptiness, you really need to study the different points of views and the subtle aspects. So it's what Rinpoche says, if people study now in Nalanda, some have studied for 12 years, and now is this opportunity that this neighboring property came onto the market. It was for 200 years a family property. I never would arise in my mind in the past before I heard it that he wants to sell it. I never dreamt of it that we ever could buy it, you know. I looked to some other smaller houses, made prayers, maybe have that in the future. Especially also on the other side of Nalanda is a house which is so close to the Gompa. If there comes to live people in the future who make a big swimming pool there, it's quite a really disturbing for the, you know. So that this very big property came onto the market. It makes in our development that now about more than 10 people have studied for 12 years. And you want to make a built-up sangha, and it's good that they can live very close and benefit from all the other things we do in the monastery. Like we really can call ourselves a monastery because we do the sojong, the confession for monks and nuns, every 2 weeks. Also the nuns come to us, at least those who are not fully ordained. And then we do the range retreat every year with its rituals. And only if you do that and you have minimum 4 fully ordained monks or nuns, you can call yourself a monastery, actually. That's the criteria to call yourself a monastery. It's you need 4 full ordained ones, because a sangha is not just when I run here on the road and it's not, oh, there we have the sangha, you know. If I'm with 3 others, actually you can say, oh, there's our sangha, you know. So it has to do a little bit with numbers and that some people know sort of certain text by heart and live it, and that we do certain rituals like the sojung and the range retreat. So if monks live very close, they still can benefit from the high lamas who come along from our teachers to ask questions, and can also gradually by continuing lifestyle as to teach and go to some groups sometimes and do a kind of semi-retreat and then build up to longer retreats. Because Lama Dzogchen Rinpoche says himself also now, I've set up, we have now 160 centers in the whole FPMT and projects. What I want now actually is to have a few people who get really realizations, you know. This is the goal from this center is at the end that we become Buddhas, you know, even if it goes by baby steps or just steps. And that is what the big teachers want, you know, that's what we do, you know. And it's not very easy to be monk and nun sometimes, so it's good to be with each other, you know, to support each other. I will tell later a little bit about my function as a director of the IMI, the International Mahayana Institute, where all the monks and nuns are collected. There's a kind of limited support for monks and nuns at this moment. We are not from a tradition who gives automatically, even if we meet the Dharma and we study, or we are a member of an organization, that a lot of monks and nuns can be supported in this society, which is quite expensive in general, you know. So Lama Yeshe, when he started the monastery, then that's also, I think, the reason why he sent us to America. I think it's fundraising is a bit important, but I think also this, that more people know about Nalanda. At this moment, there's not an equivalent of Nalanda in the United States yet. There's not a We have a monastery in Australia. We have one nunnery in Australia, and the second is on the it's in the planning. So that's already quite some steps, and there will come a second one in about 2-3-4 years. Then in Italy, there's quite a lot of monks and nuns around in the Instituto Lama Zuccaba, but they still have not very the physical site is still not very well arranged, and the management site also is not. But still, there are about 20 nuns around and about 5-7 monks. Then and then we have Nalanda in France and the nunnery, so we have about 30 monks now over the time. And then now last year they started also a nunnery in Spain. So but in United States for the time being there's still nothing. So I think I don't know. We have to make contacts here in the United States. Maybe we have to inspire others, and maybe we can. I think also maybe we can learn a lot from how is the situation for me at least as a director of the IMI. How's the situation exactly in the United States, and what can we do on longer terms, in terms of 3 or 5 years. So I met also on my tour many, many monks and nuns, and it was very useful to talk with them and hear how they think, how the situation for monks and nuns here in the United States can develop, what is there for potential, and what are still the obstacles. And so, So I think that's also a second reason I did a whole tour with the director Nalanda, and only the last 2 weeks I'm now alone because he really had to go back. So that makes me, but actually we were together on tour for all this time. Yeah. So when at the start of Nalanda, Lama Yeshe, the founder, he said to the monks and nuns, he said, in the future there will be many Nalandas, he said. This is just the start. He said, in the future, maybe, he said, and it's not due to my effort. It's due to the power of Dharma. So you as monks and nuns, you have to reflect on why it's so fantastic to live in these vows and see yourself as a lucky one that you have so much time to practice, you know. Ideally, as monks and nuns should live in a monastery, you know, not continue working in society, because then, when you have to work and you have all these costs and monastery, you have many more opportunities to do and the pujas and doing the purification practices every 2 weeks and contribute in your way to the, although now I see in the United States, of course, many monks and nuns, they have very good positions in the Dharma centers, are almost instrumental here and there in some Dharma centers or some groups. So, of course, it can be very beneficial, not to be in the monastery for some monks and nuns. But ideally, a monk or nun, when you become, you ask the teacher, what shall I do? What's the best? What is the best? You know, I gave my life anyway now to the Dharma, so what's now really the best? You know, another teacher will tell what's best. And he sends still very sometimes a nun to Venerable Fabienne. She was our director in California from the center. She became a nun in Nalanda a few months ago with Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and she's the perfect director, you know, inspiring. And they needed one in London, and Rinpoche said, for you, it comes out best to be nun. And being director there in London in the city center, you know, it's a big potential. And she really binds people and inspires as vision. So what you do as monk and nun depends on what your teacher says in general. But in general, of course, for the many monks and nuns, it would be ideal to live the first 5 years or 10 years in a monastery or nunnery. Lama Yeshe said, I want in the future there will come many Nalandas also in other continents. So I'm still, that's why now as director of the IMI, I keep really an eye on what is going on here in the United States and what is the situation, what are the challenges, and how do we deal with challenges? You know, there's everywhere there's problems, and then it depends on how you look at the situation. If it's a challenge, it sounds already a little bit more, you know, there's possibilities maybe to change the situation, and then just seeing things as dark and this is a problem. So it's impermanent. So we have to see for the future. I think Yeah, it's like one point, monasticism and how the quality of the Dharma depends. Even though at this moment most centers are run by by lay people, and it might also stay in the future, but still the very core of the whole practice in Buddhism starts with ethics. If you want to understand the big love, compassion, we have to start with ethical behavior. Then our mind becomes already a bit more pure, and then we have more chance that we really develop love and compassion and to its highest extent, and also understand wisdom, realizing emptiness. Some people think, oh, but just by being very smart and intelligent and just understanding, that's not enough, because at one point you have to apply it to your mind, and that depends on merit. It's not a pure intellectual understanding of how reality exists. And as to the whole goal is to get liberated from this cyclic existence and reach enlightenment. And for this, you need this ethic. So that's why I think the Buddha said something like that: where four full ordained monks and nuns are together, there the Dharma is alive. So he does not say like, oh, when there's a group of tantric practitioners, then the Dharma is alive. It's anyway, it's, I don't know what the depth of the meaning of what the Buddha said so, but some teachers repeat this. And, anyway, it strengthened me a little bit, like, okay, there is a meaning to it, to have a very ethical life and try to make choices. It will benefit at the end my inner reality and understanding emptiness better, and also become a better human being on longer terms, on the terms of more lives. Yeah. So let me. Yes, you said that. Yeah, there will in the future come many, many more, Yeah. So yeah, but do we do that? Like in the monastery, there's a. They say. We have a basic program. I don't know who of you study here the basic program. How many people? One, two, three, four, five. That's almost a half, six. So yeah. So then you know already a bit what the basic program is, what kind of what's studied there, and who of you know the master program? Like what's in the master program? No. So, yeah, because I was asked also to tell a little bit about the old Nalanda, because when His Holiness teaches, even sometimes very big gatherings, of course he teaches many times, it's more about love, compassion, as something that's very practical, that because people wait for something like that. So, but also sometimes he gives really a Dharma teaching, and based on a classical text. Sometimes he pulls out only a few verses, does not teach the whole text. Sometimes he goes complete text, but he always takes almost text when with from one of the, what is called the 17 pandits of Nalanda from the old monastery. So of course, the monastery was a physical. It's famous because of these big teachers. That is why it was so famous and so valuable, not because there were walls and the architecture was so special. It was because there were very big practitioners. So so the Dalai Lama said, "Oh yeah, we in Tibet, the Tibet tradition came from India. I myself regard myself as a follower of the Nalanda tradition." So, and within this Nalanda tradition, he meant that he follows the scriptures, or that what's most important is the scriptures of these 17 pandits. So if you look, I tried to learn by heart all the 17 pandits. I did not manage at the end, but anyway, the first two who are regarded as pandits from the 17 were not actually living in Nalanda. That were the Nagarjuna Asanga. They were already many centuries before. I think Nagarjuna and Aryadeva, So they lived already centuries before, but they wrote such essential texts that this was just the base for all these teachers to debate. So it would be like in 50 years saying that Lama Dzogchen Rinpoche and His Holiness were the most important teachers, you know, at Nalanda. Well, they were not really living there, you know. But anyway, so they So why was this text of Nagarjuna so important? Because Nagarjuna was the first one who wrote treatises on what is now called the he laid the base for what is now called the Madhyamika philosophy. So then it was a bit clarified by Aryadeva, and then later came some other pandits who gave commentaries on it, and then they discovered also in the commentaries that there were sometimes differences, that they could not all agree on the same interpretation. So what we do in the basic program is one of the basic program modules is, for example, tenets, and it's presenting four or five philosophical schools, like what is emptiness exactly. And you see that some people, the emptiness has to do with understanding how reality exists. So there's two truths. There's the relative truth and the ultimate truth. Can we really find something in reality? Is there some essence in reality in, for example, the carpet or in any phenomena? So there's some schools who say, yeah, at the end, if you search for it, you will find some essence in the construction of a cell. There is at the end a kind of atom which exists, which makes that's the base where the phenomena is built upon. So there's at the end a kind of true existence. And there's also some school that say, at the end, outside the self, there's nothing. It's all mind, It's you sit on your cushion, you reflect on reality, It's all, everything comes from mind, all the labeling and which at the end we call there's just a kind of mind basis of all, so that we call a kind of the mind only school. And then you have the Madhyamika schools who try to have this, to reflect in other way on reality, or about these two truths, and understand the emptiness, like how emptiness actually exists, or the lack of inherent existence. So there was one, left two of the other big teachers from the 17 are Bhava Viveka and Buddha Palita. I must be very careful because I always confuse them. But one became actually the master of the Svatantrika Madhyamika. The other from what we call the Prasangika Madhyamika, which is by all the big teachers in our monastery, but also His Holiness Dalai Lama, regarded as the final view. You cannot go out of samsara without realizing what the Prasangika Madhyamika say, that everything is dependent arising, and because it's dependent arising, it's empty of inherent existence, and it's an inherent existence because things are dependent arising. So this, how reality, any phenomena has this two realities as base. So this dependent arising refers to the conventional truth and wisdom realizing emptiness. That is connected with that things are not really exist inherently or ultimately or truly. So it said that you have to go through all these schools to understand, to come to the final view. You cannot jump in one time without thinking about other realities, how realities are perceived by other scholars, that you can do in one time. You understand the prasangikas. You might understand it technically, but that doesn't mean that you still can grasp it. And as soon as someone comes with another point of view, you will be very quickly confused. So that's why in the basic program, there's this module, tenets, and you study just different points of view on reality. And you will also see that, how in our society, some people hold more this view and other people hold more that view. And it's the base for many debates. There's many in our monastery. We do the basic program, and it's not obligatory to do debate. There's a three times a week discussion, and then there's two times a week review, something like that. Or sometimes they change a little bit, but That is still obligatory, but integration by debate depends on if people learn definitions by heart and develop also very sharp mind. There's some I think in the basic program there's about 8-9 people who find it very interesting, and they try always to make time to do these debates. So it's on a voluntary basis, like also learning Tibetan. It's in a we are an English monastery, so even if it's in France, but we don't do things in Tibetan. That not on the, in the studies. The teacher teaches in Tibetan, and we get translations in English and French. And so So, but more and more. So we have also now one monk. He is Geshe. He did all his studies in India, and then he became also Geshe there, and he is Westerner, and he is half-time in retreat, but he guides the people who wants to do a debate and have more questions. He steps in and learn this whole technique of, you need to know the format very well, and it's a way of integration, and but by far not everyone is doing that in the monastery. But in the big monasteries like Thera in India, in order to become Geshe, you do all these debates as well. It's part there of their program, and they do that of course everything in Tibetan. So in our monastery, unlike in India, we don't force people first to learn Tibetan. It was one of my considerations, but as my teachers sent me already to France, I did not give that so much thought, but it would be an option to first learn Tibetan, then become monk, and then, or become monk and learn Tibetan and do this big program. But I understood that some people of you know Lektsok, he's some family members here around, and there's three other American monks who do very well studies there. So there's four monks, American monks. I think they are really already all 8, 10, 12 years in the program there. It's almost 18 years. So I have really good hopes that one of them in the future or so. I think all four will make very good teachers in the future. And many start already to teach in India. So, So that's, for example, one of the studies, one of the modules we do in the basic program. Other basic module in the basic program is the Lamrim, it's the stages of the path to enlightenment. This is the very first text was made by Atisha, which is also then one of the 17 Pandits, Atisha was of course very special because he revived Buddhism in Tibet, and there's this very nice story. I mean, the story of Atisha. Who does not know the story of Atisha? His life story. Who does not know? You know all the story about Atisha?
Most of us know parts of his story.
Sorry?
I think most of us know parts of his story.
Oh, parts of his story. Okay, yeah. So. Yeah, so Atisha, he had some similarities to the Buddha because he was a son of a king, and he was born quite rich, our teacher then said that he had already contact with Tara when he was two, and he was in his baby already, he was very extraordinary. Anyway, he studied very well, and he had the best teachers, of course, he wanted to have realization. So even if you have all the external conditions together, doesn't mean that you become enlightened. So you have to look for the So then one teacher said, really, if you want to become enlightened, you really have to become monk. So he became monk. He, at the end, he obeyed. And then he thought what of all these teachings I heard so far, what is the most essential teachings? And then he asked himself a few times, and then he got many signs that would be the bodhicitta teachings. He made his walks around the stupa in Bodh Gaya. He was born in that region, so, and there was already a stupa. And then he heard two ladies in front of him, and one lady asked the question which he had in his mind, like, hey, what is actually the most essential teachings in Buddhism? And then the lady answered, yeah, that are the bodhicitta teachings, And then, also one time he was in front of a Tara statue, and actually he thought to ask this, and then Tara also said, like, so he looked then for who has these teachings, and then it was known that there was only one in Indonesia teacher who had this lineage, you know. So he prepared a whole entourage, and then he made, at that time was a very big trip to go from North India to Indonesia. You need a boat and so on. So and he's very famous that his teacher was so pure with his vows that as he discovered that he had a negative thought, or he did had some negative speech or negative deed, which he thought was against his vows, he immediately stopped the whole caravan. Even if he was traveling, he put a stupa or a symbol of the Buddha's mind, or the statue, and he made three prostrations. And then he really wanted to purify immediately. He didn't want to wait maybe tonight or, you know, so he was so aware that karma multiplies, and you can die, you know, tonight, like in the daytime, you know, with a caravan, you know. So yeah, so he was so he was very kept his vows very purely, and and then there's this story that but he had already the prasangika view, so he was already very wise in a certain way. So anyway, this very nice story is how he met this very high lama, that one gave initiations to the other, and so they taught each other a lot. It's very moving if you read that. He returned to India, and he became even, I think, abbot from at least by one of the highest teacher in Nalanda monastery there. So around that time the Buddhism had declined in Tibet, and there was a king who really would like Atisha to come. And this king, on his way to get Atisha, he thought, like, if I ask him myself, then he will come. He's the only one who can restore Tibetan and Buddhism in Tibet. So actually he was captured, and then the other king who captured him wanted to have a lot of gold, but he said to his son, let me die and tell that I give my life for you to come to Tibet. I pay even my life that you want to come, and use the money to make instead of buying me offer, you know, buying my life, give it to Atisha, you know. So then Atisha came to, of course, the other lamas in Nalanda did not want to let go of their best teacher, you know, like if you're here happy with your Geshe, and some other center comes, like Geshe come, then you also try to keep him here, you know. That's what happened also in Nalanda. So yeah, but at the end he said, okay, but I will return, you know, like, don't worry, I will return. So I promise hereby that I will return. So anyway, he went over the mountains or the Himalaya to the other side, to Tibet. And anyway, there was a 1-point wars, and it was not so easy to go back. And there was so much request from the Tibetans, and they created so much karma. So then Atisha, he had his promise to go back to the old monastery, to Nalanda, to return. And he saw that it might not happen anymore. So then he thought, like, instead of myself, I will write a text. And so he wrote the first Lamrim, the Stages of the Path to Enlightenment, the first text. And he gave the two messages, and with an excuse letter, like, sorry, I can really not come, it's dangerous, and still they need me here. But anyway, here you have a text. And at that time the tradition was, when a text was bad, then the writer got a very bad reputation. So they would put the text at the tail of a dog and then send the dog through the whole village, you know, like, this person wrote this text with so many mistakes. It's not Buddhist, you know. When it comes from the Buddha, it should be perfect. And if there's mistakes in the text or wrong reasoning, then we would really make fun of the writer. But with this text from Atisha, they were astonished. They were astonished how Atisha could present all the essential teachings of the Buddha until the introduction in Tantra. All the teachings of the Buddha were in this text. So, and then they were pacified. They were not, they said that this is one of the best texts we ever saw, and it's modern for that time. And they knew immediately they had a jewel in their hand, that millions of people in the future would benefit from this text, you know. This So they forgive Atisha for not returning, you know. And Atisha lived a few years more and did a lot of things in Tibet for some years. But his first Lamrim text, so Atisha is also regarded as one of the 17 pandits. It's one of the bigger texts in the basic program. And then the second, also a long module in the basic program, is the Shantideva text from the Bodhisattva Deeds, engaging in the Bodhisattva Deed, and the Bodhisattva Charivatara. Yeah, so we talk now about the two, the most amazing text which I met in Buddhism, you know, I was captured when I was for the 2 weeks. I signed up for 2 weeks summer course, and we got this Lamrim explained, and it's so amazing. It's gives answers to so many questions, and it explains Buddha's teachings. Before I thought like, oh, the Buddha. I read somewhere that the Buddha taught that karma exists, and then he says things don't exist, you know, things don't exist really, don't exist truly. I don't know, understand what the Buddha says, you know. I could not really get what the Buddha says. I really needed a Lamrim summer course, kind of. You have to read a Lamrim to see what how things relate to each other, you know, so. And start to understand a little bit about emptiness and about these two truths, the conventional truths, and how. You know, so only in the Lamrim you get kind of the overview, like a world map. You get the overview, like what is all on the planet. You know, if you want to go to the Sahara, you've never been there and you only heard stories. But if you orientate well, you can prepare yourself better. And then when you're there, you will recognize what you have prepared. And it's a little bit with the Lamrim text and the Shantideva text also as well. Shantideva, of course, it's also very short Lamrim. A few chapters are actually just the Lamrim as well, but then very short, and then it's very extensively on the six perfections. All the perfections almost have one chapter. Generosity, patience, ethics, moral self-discipline, and then concentration, wisdom. So all the six perfections he really defined what is actually patience, you know, and what kind of generosity is there, what is generosity, and how do we do that? So then we know what we talk about, because in general, of course, as we function, and sometimes if we enter a Buddhist center, we think actually we are quite a good person in general, you know, we are good people, you know, we kind of constructive. Of course, we have our angers and we have our jealousy here and there, but we don't react too much on it. And then we think, okay, we're kind of quite person. I'm generous, you know. We can have an illusion that we're very generous. But if you read it, like what is really generosity, then you get some extra homework. Yeah. So, So that's a little bit like about the, you know, about the pandits of. And then of course there's two, Gunaprabha and one other, they have written big Vinaya texts, so they revert for this. So also others are actually also like Padmasambhava, actually the one who made Buddhism work. I think Shantarakshita was the first one to go to Tibet, and there were so many obstacles, so they needed a kind of magician, you know, someone who could do really magical things. So the Padmasambhava also, there was a cave in Old Nalanda. I visited a few times. There's also a cave of Padmasambhava. But he's not really counted as one of the 17 pandits where they follow somehow. While they include Nagarjuna and Aryadeva, who did not even live there. But so that's a few of the aspects. I wanted to tell at the beginning of the talk that you can ask any questions while I'm talking, because I can rattle a little bit on. It can be a bit boring, but if as soon as you have questions, actually, please let me know. So so that's a little bit about studying. So it's what we do in the monastery. Like the monks, we try our life to organize the whole monastery life about these studies. It's so unique in the world that you have full-time study programs. In FPMT, it's only renowned that Cenresic Institute in Australia, Instituto Lama Tsukapa in Italy, and Nalanda do the full-time study programs. Here and there, there's some modules implemented by centers who are well-established, maybe here as well, that they do one of the modules of the master program. But really, full-time studies, it's quite unique. So if you have people who are interested, then we want to protect them a little bit from doing the whole day dishes and mowing the grass and repairing roofs and so. So we try to organize that with volunteers. And even pujas, we have to do a lot of pujas. Lama Sobhanji wants us to do daily about 6-7 pujas. You know, some are 15 minutes, 10 minutes. So we have a practice in the morning, Gandhala Gyema, the certified Buddhas. And so monks can do it or in the morning or in the evening. So they can choose. If they are a little bit more morning people, then they do the morning practice. And otherwise, but it's registered. We have a disciplinarian. One of the monks is the role of being the disciplinarian. So he keeps track of if people follow the rules. And the monks are obliged to choose one of those, you know. But still, you can still organize your main day around that you do these studies well. We have to work also 1 hour a day. But some do a little bit more in the weekend. Some, you know, you can compensate a bit in the weekend. Actually, compared to, I think, most of your lives, we have a kind of luxurious life if you only have to work 7, 8 hours or even 10 hours, because we don't have to do shopping. You know, you benefit so much from what others do in the monastery as well. So, and if you have a problem with the computer, then it's always computer guys, there's all, you know, so it's so easy actually to live relatively in a monastery. That part of the living in a monastery is practical, it's actually very easy. Maybe we should be quite quickly satisfied with things, like a bit accept what food we get, and we don't need 10 pairs of shoes, and so, you know, and also ropes, very easy. I mean, you have 2-3 sets, and because one can be in the wash, and so on. And hair, it's easy. We don't have to go to the you know, pay 20, 30 bucks for just fixing our hair a little bit. So it's very easy, relatively, in that part of the monastery life. So that we really try that people really can become, because this is what the teachers want. The teachers want to one point holy beings. And as it is presented by many teachers, you need to first study a little bit. Otherwise, we don't know really where we are talking about. We just immediately start with meditation, which is fine. But you need sometimes things to reflect on what kind of experience come up and how to transform these experiences. So anyway, I still think there's more ways sometimes which we say in Europe to ways which leads to Rome. I don't know what you will say. Huh?
All roads lead to Rome.
Yes, it's here as well. Okay. Even with the ocean in between. Yeah, so we had this saying, and so I believe also the validity of other traditions, but for some people it really can work like this. You can become very scholarly, and it's not enough. You need to change your heart, and there needs to be certain type of behavior which is correct or not. You have to correct yourself and reflect on your mind what's going on, and that's the only way to reach enlightenment. But yeah, the first step, study, and then integration, and then at the end, meditation. That's the three big steps. There's a question.
I was wondering if you're required to memorize texts as they are required to do so in the monastery of India.
Okay, yes. The question is about if we are required to memorize texts. So, still, I think when you're relative young, I mean, what options do we have as monks, you know? So there's still the monastery in Sira, where if someone is young and good health and very intelligent, I would say, son, please go to Sira, you know? That's the best, you know? You get still much more, there's much more push even to memorize and study, you know. In Nalanda, we study a little bit on the Western way with our own insights. Some can memorize easily. There's a few who can memorize very well, and especially those who want to also do debate. You have to memorize certain things. And even for the exams, I think those who do the basic program, there's already some memorization. But goes more to the essence, you know, like... what are definitions of a follower of the Chittamatrin philosophy, then you learn a few points which you have to memorize, and there's exams for it. Lama Zopa Rinpoche encourages, he says, for Westerners it works better if you do exams. So there's some level of, and I think in our monastery people have a little bit more time, and especially if they like debate, but all the monks are different. At the end, being monk is not in the first place about being intelligent. There's monks who have average intelligence, low intelligence. There's now also someone wants to become monk, and yeah, I don't see him studying so much, but he is devoted to the teachers, and he has good behavior, and he's willing to help others. So there can be all reasons to say, okay, yeah, you can become monk, but then that might not be the classical study monk, but still we might ask him to go to all the teachings, and then how much he gets from the exams, we will see. It's not obliged to pass all the exams, you know, it's obliged to make them and do your best, you know, and use your time and get an experience of what it means to read text. Yeah, some people have also negative experiences in their life with studies, you know, so and for them it's quite a, you know, you have to everything, and like it's something strange for them, like there's the I and there's the books. Well, if you have another approach, that these texts are really, that actually you're connected with the mind of the one who wrote the text, like some texts from His Holiness and Lama Zopa Rinpoche also, if you transcribe what Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, you hear so much more, and then you reread it again, and then and you can feel what what these words are standing for. That's another way of studying. It's being in touch with Dharma itself, with the essence of the mind behind these words. Like personally, I'm also I'm not so very good at memorization, and I study it slowly. So I can read 3-4 pages while other is already page 10. So. And for me, you still can call it study. It goes slower than maybe someone else, but that's studying for me, you know. So there's different ways of, especially with sutras, reading sutras, you can have really this experience. And that Lama Zopa Rinpoche says is already reading a few sutras, it purifies so much. It's just because you are in connection with what you read and recite. So, in every program we have a few very smart ones and who can memorize quite good, but it's not the core of the culture. Like in Syria it's much more cultivated and there's much more games even, who is smarter and who is making fun of each other, and really, and they break at the same time when they do these debate games, they break each other's egos, and I see the playfulness of it, and that you should not identify with this role or that role, or, you know, it's if someone becomes angry because you're defeated or just pride, then everyone is pointing and laughed at you until you laugh as well, you know, that you let go of the anger or the pride or jealousy or something, you know, whatever disturbing emotions you have. The whole group, they there's something wrong with you. And they wait until you become one with them, you know? Then, that's their culture, yes. So, there was a question here?
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about IMI, how it supports the monks and nuns, and what are the needs of monks and nuns in FPMT?
Ah, very good question. Yeah, I'm very happy to talk about that as well, because, yeah, so about 2 years ago I was asked to be director, and Lama Zopa Rinpoche appointed, and I'm very happy to that I can contribute to life of monks and nuns worldwide. One of the first things I did is having a board, because there was no board before. So, and Venerable Lektok, who some of you know, American monk, he lives now in IMI house. So I asked him to be on board. Actually, I asked all the directors and coordinators of the monasteries. I wanted to have more connection with monasteries and nunneries. Also, as Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, it's best to live in monasteries and nunneries. I think we should much more the monasteries and nunneries support the monasteries and nunneries to become stronger and support their own monks and nuns. So, yeah, from France, the director of Nalanda, the director of Dr. Palmo, from Italy, the one representative from the nuns, Ciliana, one from Massimo. From America, we have Venerable Tendron, who is also known here very well. Yeah, so she is in the board, and then one nun from Shinrezig Institute, and one monk from Thupten Jesum Ling in Australia, those two. Yeah, so sometimes very difficult to find time to be together on this planet with Skype meetings because always one is sleeping. So, but anyway, we manage, and I have a very nice board, and then we have, so what IMI is doing is we get some money from private donors, I think 50%, and then we get about 30% also from, anyway, we got quite some money from the FPMT centers, like also this center is supposed to give $200-$300 a year to the IMI. So we get from FPMT centers and private donors money, and we distribute it. We spent, I think, about 50% to individual monks and nuns who have less money, you know. Like, to become monk and nun, we emphasize in general to have money for 1, 2, 3 years, and because no one is a millionaire or has all the money for the rest of his life or her life. So, we can support monks and nuns with studies. So the one criteria to give money is that they need to not to have a lot of money. So we say around 7,000 or less. Then also need to be at least 2 years monk and nun. So we really emphasize that people really create karma and cause conditions to be monk and nun. And then, we support them with retreats. With private retreats, if Lama Zopra Mishe says so, or another high regarded Lama, he sends someone a retreat for studies, one of the study programs in monastery or nunneries, or service, when monk and nun wants to serve here and there, and there's almost no support, or Lama Zopra Mishe says it's good to do this, then we also support. And then we support retreats with Lama Zopa Rinpoche, because we think that monks and nuns should know the tradition of Lama Zopa Rinpoche. We are in the, Lama Zopa is the most important teacher besides His Holiness, so we should know what Lama Zopa Rinpoche wants, and he wants sometimes very particular things, so we encourage to have a little bit, and at least we want to contribute that people know about Lama Zopa Rinpoche and wants to go to these big retreats, especially because many monks and nuns still don't live in monasteries and nunneries, they live somewhere alone, and they have not much money, and so this, for example, next year, this year was a big retreat in France, in Institut Vajrayogini. So then we supported, I think, 8 or 9 or 10 monks and nuns with participation in their they still have to pay for their own journeys, but we pay them for the food. And for next year, we plan in Australia. There's 2 big retreats with Lama Zopa Rinpoche and the Lamp of the Path again here, close in North Carolina. So then we also hope to support some monks and nuns with their expenses. Yeah. Even though many times they give already discount to monks and nuns, but still it's a lot of money sometimes. Yeah. So this is how we want support. It's one of the things we do. You want to buy money? Okay.
I just wanted to ask the question about how many monks and nuns there are in the FPM tradition.
Yes. So in our tradition, at least members, we have now about 320, I think, 320, more or less, yes. And then, we support each year by, I think last year a little bit less, I think between 2025 and the year before was 37, I think. 36, I think, because then also someone asked, Armand, do you pay enough to nuns? And then I counted, and I said it was exactly 18, and that was my first year. We did not have any policy on this or something. I did not, was not aware of it, but because I got this question from one nun, I thought like, okay, I will count, and it was 18, so I was very happy. We supported 18 monks and 18 nuns, so it was by chance. Yeah. So, other thing we support is education, because it's very important that monks and nuns know a little bit how to behave, like what are the rules, what are is the Vinaya, and you don't get regular classes in Dharma centers like this, you know, so that you have to. So every year His Holiness the Dalai Lama gives one opportunity to ordain, and you have to apply, and you have to You have all kinds of criteria. And then they give the Tushita Center, is also FPMT Center, Dharamsala. They organize one course, 1 month preparation. It's called a pre-ordination course. So the monks and nuns can prepare, and then they get the ordination with His Holiness. And this month's retreat is obligatory, and this we call the pre-ordination course. And the IMI pays half the money. Also, we put then later, we have a website. We are another thing the IMI is doing, of course, being available for everyone who wants to interact. It can be centers. It can be for tens of reasons, for books or literature or conflicts in the center between Sangha or a director or whatever. Everything can happen in a human society. So we can be involved for this reason. So we put on information on the website. We have our own website. So we have to upkeep that. We have our member area on the website, so that's only for these 320 monks and nuns. We put a lot of courses and like the recordings from such a course. If it's a little bit new or a bit different than last year, we put it there, you know. So that it's only accessible then for the monks and nuns. We are kind of union also sometimes a bit for the monks and nuns, you know. If I look at Nalanda, Nalanda is for us most important. Like the IMI is not such a big importance, you know, because somehow our life is around Nalanda. And we do also a little bit fundraising, and we take care of ourselves and for each other. But the IMI is quite important for all those monks and nuns who actually not so much live in a monastery or nunnery. They feel part of a community, worldwide community. We make newsletters we try to, like also in the Lamp of the Path, the monks and nuns try to come one time together to see what are kind of issues or what are the developments or, the opportunity that I am there to answer questions, or they find that I am, I should do different things, you know. So there's opportunity to be community and utter complaints or concerns, or share happiness, just share the happiness to be together, and we feel brothers and sisters. This also has some value. So depending on the situation, we are of the members of have a of different importance for the members in a certain way. But I heard from monks and nuns who are more isolated that they find the IMI very important.
So I wanted to ask a little bit more about Nalanda, what you're fundraising. So I was reading in the brochures and stuff, it looks like that land is going to be actually up for sale in 2020, which is a few weeks away. And it looked like, again, in the information that you had, at least half of the money?
Yes, we have already more than half the money. Yes.
When in 2020 is that land? How crunched are you?
Yeah, it's good question. So yeah, he told us in October last year. So then in November we watched, and then we checked with Lama Zopa Rinpoche in November last year. Then he said in November last year, take a half a year to think about it, you know. So and then exactly then half a year later Lama Zopa Rinpoche would come. So it was very auspicious, kind of. So. Yeah, so we used those 6 months to negotiate a little bit. So he went a little bit down in price, and we make a kind of decision. Okay, this is what we at least want to offer, you know. And then Lama Zopa Rinpoche came. It was still not finished, the whole negotiation, but we were kind of close. And then he was delighted with the visit of Lama Zopa Rinpoche. He said, "Oh, it was so ecstatic." You saw a few spring. He really. But then also, I think his turn to before he had something like let go of a property of 200 years was emotional and not so easy. And I think then he saw how serious we were, and the Lama Zopa Rinpoche offered the first 100,000, and then maybe he started to become very optimistic that we would have the money then very quickly. So we stayed with him in contact, and then we told him, Lama Zopa Rinpoche sent us to the United States, so we will go maybe in October, November, December to the United States. We'll see then if we have the money, end of December. So that's how we left before. Now, the director went back already again to talk with him, you know, so, and also we prepare, we have from the 1,300,000, we have, I think about $800,000 or $900,000 now. Still a lot to come in. Also now, last week I met a this person gave 500, another one gave 500, the Miller representative gave a few hundred, you know, so money drops still good in. And also some people said, we will donate and the money did not arrive yet. So we will see one of these weeks how much we have and we report to him. We have to round up the complete final price and we have then to see I think he prepares now a plan B, but we still hope that we get the other 400,000. Yeah, but I think now he sees that we are close and I think then he doesn't mind to wait maybe 2 or 3 months, but I don't know how his state of his mind is. But we don't expect that he goes to the market and sells it to someone else because we pay the market price. We made also two or two others. We are not interested basically to buy something further on, much further on, you know. This was not the whole idea. The whole idea is because it's bordering, more or less bordering us, it's one big property on one point. So that's why we have some initial steps. So we are very happy to pay 50,000 more than anyone else you do, you know. So, and this is what at the end will happen at the end, I think. So we have paid now the market price. We said, okay, we will pay the market price. And he asked still a little bit more. So we might end up giving a little bit more because it's so precious for us. But we also don't want to pay too much more. It's not responsible to the sponsors, you know. So, yeah, we don't know how it will end. But Lama Zobrinche blessed the land already. Lektsok, he was with us when Lama Zobrinche visited. Maybe you saw him also on the video on the back with me. And because he speaks Tibetan, and then afterwards he said, you know, Lama Zobrinche said, let's do some prayers. He blessed the land, you know. Usually you do it only when you have it. now we're going to use this for the monastery, you know. Yes, it's a kind of for the spirits in the ground and so on, you know. So this will be monastery grounds, you know. It's a little bit ahead. And then someone became monk and is already a practitioner since 81, I think. He studied already so much. So he said you stay in Nalanda with the other monks, you help Nalanda, and then as soon as you have the property, you will go there. So he sent already the first people there. He gives already in the advice. He takes it as sure that we get it, you know. And so, it's an exciting period, actually. So, so we still need, if anyone knows very rich people, I'm very happy to do a Skype with this person or... but for the rest, even if you contribute $1, you know, you contribute to the sea, you know. As long as then this retreat land will exist, if it's 500 years and you'll go already through your 10th life after, you still benefit, there's still karma coming from that you contributed to this peace, you know. Everyone who contributes one drop to the ocean contributes to the restart of that as an ocean, you know. So I think that's the most important point, that we somehow create karma, you know, when there's a...
And you can donate on the website?
Yes, I put some brochures there in the hallway. I've only very few anymore because it's the end of the tour, so I put them 4, 5, 6 or something. So everyone who is seriously interested, I have one, two more in my bag. Yeah. Yeah, so and then also from the IMI, I put some flyers there so they can... So and that one is here in America. So those who want really tax deduction can better send the money to Tendren. You know, she's a bookkeeper here in America. Then you can get for the tax deduction. If for Nalanda, it's not possible for tax deduction. So if that's important for you, so there's the brochure and we have different systems. So. Best is if people make online with a credit card or PayPal, and there's all the bank details there. Yeah, some people give me a check, so that I will check. I come back December 29 at Nalanda, so then I go to the bank. It takes 1 month to cash it, but the banks, they don't know always what to do. Not everyone knows how it works. There's a little bit more work, but cash, also checks work very well. So, and cash also, of course, everyone who gives a dollar, you don't have to do banker thing, you know. Yeah. So, it's support for monks and nuns, I think. Yeah, we have to focus really in the future on monastic life. So I really hope And hope also that this whole tour for myself, I dedicate also for future monastery and nunnery here in United States. So I have many talks now, like what are all kind of options, what are living in the hearts of people. And I will discuss it at one point with Lama Zopan Rinpoche when the time is right. It's not a pressure, cooker pressure. It's not there's a lot of monks and nuns waiting to start a monastery also. So, there has to happen something. Because the big problem in our tradition here is that the average age of monks and nuns are 65, you know. So what's the future, you know? So do we want to pick it up, you know? So. And there's some who want to pay a price for it. They are willing to start a monastery or nunnery. But yeah, there need to be quite a lot of positive energy, even more than starting a Dharma center somewhere. So you need quite a group of committed people, and then you need quite some little bit sponsors, or at least someone who donates the first house or something, you know, the place where you can gather and where you can build up. Like Nalanda started. It's actually a nice story to tell. Nalanda started with this fire in Vajrayogini, you know, that I told. So, there was a guy working at that time in the Vajrayogini as volunteer in 79, 80. He was the manager because the director, Elizabeth, was a nun. She lived more in Paris and she came sometimes to arrange things, you know, arrange things on by telephone. But said he found the place Nalanda. He went to these agencies, and he found Nalanda. So, and then later he married. He had a family. He had children. Grew up. And he had a bakery. And what happened? A fire in the bakery. So, when he was insured, he got interest money. So he went to see Geshe Tenge, the very old Geshe. By chance, he died 2 months ago. But he, the resident Geshe of Vajrayogini. And he said, "Oh, Geshe Tenge, do you also need maybe something for the nuns, or do you want a retreat place? I have now my property, and I got insurance money. I can buy something different. I don't want to restart my bakery. You know, I'm now 65 or something, so I'm not this ambition anymore to build it up." So, and Geshe Tenge, it's always Lama Zopan Rinpoche who guides us. So, yeah, Lama Zopan said, "Yeah, it came out very good." So, and Chantal, but anyway, the story is same man. Fire, which he did not ignite himself, that was insurance money. And one time he helps monks and one time he helps the nuns, you know, and it's 35 years in between. So sometimes people appear as just ordinary, but maybe they are very special, actually. You know, yeah. So this kind of stories that you make you think it seems to be a very ordinary, average French guy, but maybe he is at least very special because of his deeds, and he sees the benefit of Dharma, and you know, so there's something more to it. Yeah. More questions?
How do you manage being able to be director and study? I mean, like, it seems like the directing of a monastery would be so full time.
Yeah, one person can do it and one other not. Yeah. So Gyaltsen, the current director, he is very good in it. He is in the morning, he is only in his studies and he's doing his practice, commitments in the morning, only his personal commitments in the morning, and then he's only there, goes for breakfast and studies, and he talks only about Dharma. Then after lunch, he's doing his, then he has a kind of, he's very practical, has 5-6 priorities. This is most important than Lana. So he takes care for that, and then he takes 1-2 hours to work after, and then the rest of the day can be very different and according to needs and preparation sometimes, and doing shopping or going to whatever he has to do. Evening he's doing it evening puja, and after it's only Dharma, and then also the morning again, only Dharma. And he has control. Yeah. But for me, not. When I go to teaching, I think the whole time about problems. Yeah. It's not this focus. Sorry. Yeah. It's just not how my mind works. I'm not good in it. Yeah. So when it's not too very difficult, like Lam Rim, and I heard it some before, I still go to teachings, and then I try to be better in that and improve from day to day my mind, and I go more with that. And then I have, of course, every year 1 or 2 times retreat. I do myself retreat also different types of retreat. That, now for January, I'm also at this moment. I asked there's some very good one who can do Yamataka retreat. So he gives Yamataka retreat in January, and I do the SPC task for this. So I arrange the people coming and going and all the setup and so on. Yeah, so then I go back at the end, and I do for 1 month retreat, and then I don't do for the rest too much other thing. I'm not director anymore, so I have not this scope. Yeah, at one point, actually, I just got sick, and then I asked Lama Zopen, but say, like, is this good for Nalanda, and is this good for me, you know? And then Rinpoche said, continue 1 year. This was in 2012. So he said, continue 1 year, then you do retreat, and then you do the basic, continue basic program. So yeah, then I could for a while, I could... 2016 and 17, I could focus complete on the basic program. So for 2 years, I was not director. I organized here some incident, you know, project kind of things. But yeah, some person can do it, others not. Depends on the mind, you know. Depends on our karma, how cause conditions, how you function. Yeah. But you have trained before or not, you know. Yeah. Yeah, also the life of the monks are all very different. Some like studies very much, and they do one after the other, you know. And yeah, and then others like end studies and retreats. So yeah, some actually like only retreats, and they're happy to follow the studies because yeah, it's asked and they see the benefits and they do it. But they actually they like retreats, you know. So everyone has a kind of different preposition, yeah. And there's space for, and that's like, and like Nalanda is, there's space for differences between each other, you know. Not only we are all from different countries, we speak different languages, and we have different mentalities, different ideas about what is good, of how you deal with some conflict, for example. Some are raised like, oh, yeah, when you say things, you know, you communicate, and others have something, whoa, you don't say this, you know. Yeah, so there's really differences, and you see sometimes because of culture and differences, there comes some conflict, but as long as we all practice Dharma and see things as just mind, and there's more things good and more approaches, and you try to listen, and then things work out. That is also one of the nice aspects of Nalanda. There's a kind of, you know, there's a framework for how everything functions, like which activities are there. So there's a kind of layout, but there's a lot of flexibility as well. There's of course half the community are there longer than 7, 10, maybe 10 years. I think half the community. Then, but still, people come and go. That comes every week, some new for volunteer or someone who's doing retreat. We have also most 2, 3, 4, 5 people doing retreats. They do their own thing, as long as they pay and they keep all the vows and they don't disturb others. And for us, it's okay. So, some ask for more guidance, some less, but. Yeah, there will come always new interesting people. And people come from all over the world, so everyone has stories to tell, which is surprising or nice to you to hear. Or yeah, then and we have, of course, we as monk and nun, it's good to have your equal attitude towards everyone. But on the other hand, yeah, with some people, it's always searching to understand each other, and others, it's like we know each other 100 years or something, you know, so... It's one eye, you can see, oh, you want this, I want that, okay, so we do this, okay, yeah, very quickly agreement, and with others people, oh, I have to ask a favor, how shall I bring it, I have to reflect half an hour on it, and then ask this person to do, you know, like, so very different, and but it's so interesting, it makes also so interesting, yeah. Yeah, I'm very happy, and I think it's very valuable to contribute to a place where so many people come and can heal, like many volunteers, they are not even Buddhist, you know, so they just look for a peaceful place, and then they have their questions, and they find here and there pieces of their answers, depends on how they are coached or who they ask for advice, and you know, some people have a lot of homework because of negative things ripened in their lives, in their families, in their relationships, or accidents, or whatever, you know. So, yeah, and they have to they look for answers in their lives, and And then, we just offer this opportunity to be there and look for answers. And you know, some people are very determined. They know exactly what they want, and they come for these big study programs. There's only one in the world, so they move. They put everything aside to do that. And then there's others, you know, yeah. All the course conditions should be together, you know, one monk or nun, when they have 2,000 on their bank account, they think, wow, I have a lot of money, 2,000. And others, 2,000 monk, how do I live next week? Or, you know, what is for one is not, is for another not. And we have all these different mindsets, you know, it comes all together Yeah, and that's also in the IMI. We have a review committee, so the money we spent is discussed with Venerable Roger and then Venerable Steve, a senior monk, English monk in Land of Medicine Buddha, and Venerable Chantal, who is now director of the nunnery in France, but she was director before me. And they are the review committee, so they decide, like everyone who applies, we have a kind of questionnaire, the monks and nuns, and then we look at it together, is this enough or should it be more or less? And it's normative here and there. Yeah. So, but we do our best, to make the path to enlightenment also a little bit, nice and not too difficult. You know, there's difficulties enough. So, Anyways, I think that's a bit what I want to say. If there's still questions, you can, I'm still around, so you can ask me for more things. I put also some my business card. It's one student from Romania. She had the opportunity to buy to make this free for me. So then she offered all these business cards. So I put that on the table. Some IMI brochures. They look like this. And then the bank details are on the back of this brochure, and we have a little bit of what kind of activities we do, but I think you saw it already here in many of these in the video. Yeah. So thank you very much for having me here listening, and thank you for all the prayers you make. So maybe we end with good dedication. What is our tradition, because everything we do has consequences, so we have been active here. So let me dedicate all the positive energy we generated by listening, by rejoicing, by being happy about the good things in the world, the gratitude. So we can dedicate all the positive energy also from each other. Can dedicate to the great enlightenment, so that we make develop the wisdom realizing emptiness, that we may develop bodhicitta, the perfect altruistic mind, to benefit all sentient beings, to use whatever we have and positive energy physically, mentally, financially, and so that we ultimately want to use it for the benefit of all sentient beings. So then we want to dedicate also for all the holy beings who are active on this planet, especially His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Lama Zopa Rinpoche. So may, and all other teachers we have, who benefit countless beings, teachers from all traditions who practice the pure Dharma, may they have success, and may they go wherever they want. May His Holiness be able again to Tibet and to all the countries who don't give him a visa. So then all their projects which benefit so many beings, may all the project of His Holiness Lama Zopa Rinpoche be realized, may all the obstacles be removed. Then we can dedicate for our personal father mother from this life. Of course, everyone has been our father mother, but at this moment we have this body. And this body is very precious because it made us possible that we listen with our ears and speak and think. So our mind is very connected with this body, and we can reach enlightenment in this life due to our father and mother. And they gave us this body. We have this body pure from them. So wherever they are, our father and mother, and they have been very kind to us. They carried us in their belly. They protected us from all kinds of things. They make us social, they learn us language and so forth. So we dedicate to her that all, that he may never face suffering again, may they be free from suffering, all forms of suffering. And may they only have good rebirths and only be able to practice the path so that they are forever free of all types of suffering. And we dedicate for world peace and for all beings who are suffer at this moment in a very manifest way. Those people have no homes in war situations. People who suffer because of the elements who are out of balance. Too much fire, too much winds and storms, too much water. And some people are really in danger and fighting for their lives. Or then those who have lost their body the past weeks or past days and look for a new body, the bardo beings, we call them the bardo beings. May they find a good rebirth or in the pure land or in, as human being again so that they continue their mind development. Then we continue, and then we also pray for all those who have asked us to pray for them, or those we have a karma connection now with us, like our colleagues, our neighbors, current family members, all those we have contact with, all our friends, even our enemies, temporarily enemies, or those who appear to us as difficult persons in our mind. May all these dear former mother sentient beings reach enlightenment, be free of their suffering situation, be free of depression, be free of anxiety, fears. And then we pray for ourselves. May we always be able to also serve holy beings, help others, having the strength, the qualities, the resources to help others. If for this it's good that we develop our qualities and reach enlightenment, then there's nothing compared to a Buddha who can do so many other things for sentient beings. So may we always be able and never have a lower rebirth and never have serious obstacles to help other sentient beings, have always good health and get resources so we can contribute to happiness of others. And of course, we dedicate to the Dharma Center here. So fantastic what you have here. It's so unique from what I hear. It's here there's Dharma Group. They have no teachers at all. And you have here two Tibetan teachers. You have here a lot of good-hearted people. The Dharma Center is only so successful because there's quite some people around who listens well to others, who really dedicate their time, their precious time, for free even. And then and I heard that there's about three people who can teach basic requirements of discovering Buddhism, and a few people can also teach the introductory modules like Meditation 101 and so forth. So it's really so fantastic that you have each other here as group. And as a group, we can do so much more for the world. So it's so fantastic that you have this Dharma Center here. So, yeah, so we dedicate also to each other's welfare and a quick path. And I also would like to dedicate to one dog, Oggy. Yeah, so. The dog is very sick and we don't know exactly what's going on, so anyway, for whatever happens only for good paths for the dog and their carers. So thank you very much for sharing this evening here. So it's
On behalf of Kadampa Center, I'd like to thank you for your brief but very valuable visit here. We thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
And for your generosity in giving us this wonderful opportunity to participate in this fantastic project at Nalanda Monastery. And we will keep in our prayers for its quick and rapid and perfect success.
Wow, thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah. You're back. Thank you. Yeah.
Anything? Okay, thank you.
I did not even use my computer.
See you all again on a good occasion.
Yeah. Thank you. Think Landa is open with you.
Yeah.
Are you coming to Landa?
Road trip.
Somewhere in the Mandala. Good for you.